Happy New Year!
Welcome
to 2009.
This is the first podcast of Movie Banter of 2009. Hope you had a good Christmas, New Year, etc. Thank you for tuning in.
Yes, well done. You're fighting through the hangover.
This is New Year's Day we're recording this. We don't normally try and put an exact date on these things, but today, this is New Year's Day, first day of the year. We've just had a fine lunch at Harvester.
Oh, yes.
Which is a winner. If you're listening in America, Harvester's a lot like
sort of
Wendy's.
Applebee's?
No. Denny's? Applebee's.
Yeah, Applebee's, I think. It's
Applebee's.
Sort of unexciting, but fairly, you know, but solid, decent restaurant
fare. Yeah, they sort of make you convinced that you're in a farmhouse with beams.
Yes.
Except today it felt like the window was open.
True.
Living freezing.
It was the coldest restaurant I've ever been
very
in my
life. Very, very cold. But anyway, we are here to banter about movies. And this is a review, really, of 2008 of our favourite films. We'll be sort of counting down our top five films and also a couple of the real bad ones.
Yes, the awful, awful messes of 2008.
There were ups, there were downs.
Yes.
There were sideways. But I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And yes, this is episode 8.
It is.
I believe.
We need to work out with the name. But so we'll do that off air.
We'll do it off air. And you'll know what it will be by then.
We're trying to restrict ourselves to sensible running times. And having a 5-minute discussion on films with the number 8 in them.
That's true.
Would just
when you already know what it's called. That's
exactly, because you've now downloaded it. So there's no point hearing the thought behind the scenes.
Before we get on to the films of the year, of our particular picks for the last 12 months, we've had an email in, which we alluded to last week, but didn't have it. So we were just guessing what this emailer wrote,
we were roughly improvising, because the podcast was a little bit sprung on us.
Yeah,
sprung on me by you.
We were a bit drunk last week, sorry about that. Today we're just hungover, so that's
yes,
all fine.
Yes, that's good. So we're improving.
We're getting there.
Yes.
So this email is from Jed from Singapore. He says, I'm a big fan of the podcast and moviemistakes.com, which isn't mine.
Yes, but it's my website, which is, yeah, frankly, phenomenal.
Jed, you're wrong.
He's not. He's a very, very correct man.
Now, this is interesting, because we were talking a few weeks ago about the films of our youth. So we grew up sort of weird.
We're
sort
of children of
children
the 80s.
Children of the 80s, yeah. Movie-wise. But then we're wondering what are the sort of, you know, younger people, who are children of the 90s, what were the making sort of the films of the 90s that sort of made their youth?
Yes, they're the ones that they really remember and have very fond memories of, even independent, I think, of the quality of those films, necessarily.
Yes.
They're generally not bad films, but films that you think more fondly of.
Yeah, because you grew up with them, yeah. So Jed, finally, can answer this for us. Jed says,
we now have his email.
He says, I'm 15 and quite the movie buff, if I say so myself. Growing up, many of the films I really like were more so from the early 2000s as opposed to the 90s. That's still okay. But there are plenty of films from that era that I love. The Rock, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, Jurassic Park, The Matrix, and Deep Impact. Oh, he was doing so well Deep Impact.
Deep Impact, I don't entirely agree, but I can see his point. Because Deep Impact is a much better film on many levels than Armageddon. But it didn't do as well, but that doesn't mean it's not a bad film. It tends to get the reaction you just had, which is, Deep Impact. Because you compare it to Armageddon, which is embedded as this
just
huge
Armageddon
action
came first,
thing.
Really. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah, I think but by the time we got Deep Impact, we were all like,
we're asteroided out,
whatever.
Yes, although it was on the other day and I caught a bit of it, and it's just quite interesting seeing very young people who are now more famous.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
But yeah, so that makes sense. I agree with all of them, because The Rock is sort of mindless action in a good way.
Yeah,
so it's probably more my thing than yours.
Yeah, I guess I enjoy it though. I can see the point. Terminator 2 is very good.
Yeah,
And Jurassic Park, of course, classic, and Matrix, fair enough as well.
Matrix, fair enough as well. It's just throwing that out.
Yeah, it's all right.
Matrix is phenomenal.
It'll do.
Oh, how
it'll
dare
do.
You. And Jurassic Park, we had this discussion the other day, it's not aged as well as we'd like, but it's not bad, I think.
But certainly, looking back on it, it's one of those epoch-making films of the time that you can say that was definitely... I remember when I was, I was in a cinema when I first saw that film.
Watching that. Nice. And also, the first mistake I ever spotted, I think, was
really?
In Jurassic Park.
Jurassic
Park.
Which
and so a career was born.
What was the first mistake?
It's when Nedry is escaping after sabotaging the park, and he gets his truck stuck. Looks down the slope, and there's a road with an arrow pointing, I think, straight ahead.
Yeah.
And he thinks, right, I'm going to get out that way. Cuts back to him for a bit. Cuts back to the road sign, and the sign is suddenly pointing left.
Oh.
Which is just a bit
and
weird.
And there it all began.
Oh, yes. That was 93. That was before anyone had ever even thought of the internet existing.
That to blame. So, anyway, Jed, all these wonderful films, they boast innovative special effects, fantastic stories, and decent, if not terrific, performances from stars such as Nicolas Cage, Taye Leone, Sean Connery, and Sam Neill. Jurassic Park. He also says, I love almost everything Harrison Ford did from that time, as he reached an age where typical actors cannot play the action hero or hunk. He balanced action and drama near perfectly in such classics as The Fugitive, Air Force One, Patriot Games, and Frantic. Which I approve of. As a 15-year-old, well done, Jed, for quoting Frantic. I'm quite impressed.
True.
Top of the class. Well done. I forgive you now for Deep Impact.
Yes. I think it's a fair point, because I remember William Goldman, a book you lent me, who's a screenwriter, who writes essays, or it's a book of essays, for, I think every 6 months, talking about the films of the
it's
era.
It's very good, isn't it?
And it's a very good point he makes about Titanic, saying that in years to come, Titanic will probably, the importance of it will be diminished, or we'll forget about it, or make it, mock it a bit and stereotype it. But don't forget, here and now, here in 1998, when Titanic was made, it's phenomenal. It's taking the world by storm. Everyone's in awe of it. It's setting records. Everyone's being completely blown away by this film, which is incredible. And I think, to a much lesser degree, that's true of Harrison Ford. I think now we look at Harrison Ford and think, oh, he's a troubled man looking after his family, and it's a stereotypical thing. But back in that era, he was one of the earlier, older action heroes who was doing something that hadn't really been done that much before. And he was playing, he was sort of carving out that role.
Yeah.
And while now we're quite used to it, and we think, oh, it's Harrison Ford
and,
playing
and
Harrison
Ford
again.
And other people step into it as well, don't they, really? Yes. Now. Other actors. I mean, even like the De Niro's and Pacino's at the time were still, they didn't know what they were doing at the time, really.
Yeah.
But now they'll do those sort of films where it's the trouble.
Yeah, because Harrison Ford blazed the trail for it, as it were.
Well blazed.
So, yeah, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Jed. Cheers for that. Thank you. Yes. And we're glad to have your email with us this week. That's always good.
We finally caught up with it.
Thank you very much indeed. So, anyway, we are now going to go on to the best films of 2008.
Actually, one last thing relating to another email. We have had other emails in, but we'll get to them later, because this is slightly more focused on films of 2008.
Yeah, this is a special.
So if you have emailed, we're going to get to you. We're not just ignoring you. But, yes, I just thought I wanted to cover that.
By the way, you're hinting we have had lots of emails in there.
We've had a couple.
Oh, that's all right, then.
Fair enough. But, yes, but we're just not getting them yet.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because we're trying to keep the running time down.
Your time will come.
Yes.
So, for now, we're going to sort of race through these. Basically, I've got a top five picked out. John's got a top eight,
several.
Which will whittle down, you know,
yes,
as we go.
I'll
begin with my number five and the list. I'm going to build up.
Oh, you've actually ordered them?
Oh, yeah, I've ordered them. So you've got to order as we go.
No, see, because I don't like ordered lists. Can you really pick the best film ever?
Yeah, I can.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Once Upon a Time
in
America.
I know, exactly. Once Upon a Time in America is my favourite film ever, which I will come to another week and dwell gladly.
Could you definitely structure a top 10?
Whatever.
Yeah.
I could look at two films. I had to compare and contrast and say which film's better, then I'd be able to.
No, I find it too difficult to make. I can pick these 10 films are better than these other films, but I can't order.
So you say in this, but we clearly haven't planned this very well at all. So I'll do a top 5, counting from 5 to 1.
Yeah.
And John will do
a
top.
I'll then reel off just a collection of films.
A top X, counting from X to X.
Yeah, counting from X to Y.
Yeah.
Not from X to X, then it's just a list of one.
Just one, exactly. Let's hope it is. Anyway. I get the running time down. Anyway, so
except for this discussion, which is now
right about that. So anyway, at number five for me, my fifth favourite film of the year, Iron Man.
Which was phenomenal. But I'm frankly slightly surprised that you chose it, because it's more of my sort of a film.
I'm not an action film fan particularly, unless done very well, and I'm also not a superhero film fan. But that's why I liked Iron Man, because it was one of the most realistic of all superhero films I could see. Because it was all believable, all the way through. And every little scene, going on to the next one, I could believe that this guy was kidnapped by people in the Middle East. I could believe they asked him to make weaponry. I could believe that he then used it to escape. And it was all sort of, you know, it did get a bit silly, of course, as all superhero films do.
Yes.
But it was all
But it's all grounded in its own rules.
Exactly.
And even though, you know, no one's actually going to build that Iron Man outfit, but it's at least comprehensible that, you know, he's got the money and the wealth and he could make it work.
And it was great as well to have a superhero film which actually had actors who could act and are good actors in it. Robert Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, they didn't just sort of, you know, like Daredevil, Ben Affleck. You know, it's not one of those. It's grounded in good acting. So
yes. No, it's very true. And also, yeah, because people like Jeff Bridges, who doesn't actually have all that much to do in it, he's sort of the bad guy. And you could have had any number of other people just slotted into that role. But, and well, like Gwyneth Paltrow as well, she doesn't have a huge amount to do.
No.
But they get worthwhile people in those roles.
And what
and
she
it
does
pays
do,
off.
Does very well. Yeah. So, yeah, fair play to her. That's all I have to say on Iron Man, really, because I'm going to crack through it, really. So in that sense, although I'm not a fan of the genre, I thought that delivered for me, really. So fair play to it.
And rightly so.
Good.
You're leading on? I thought you were going to do your four.
Well, no,
you
know, I'll back and forth a bit. So you pick one.
Okay. Well, one of mine, although I'm not ordering them.
Pick your number five-ish.
The one that ties in best to this discussion, it would not be my number five. It would be near the top.
Oh, we'll go. Well,
I'll be vague.
I know what this is one is going to be. This is going to be another superhero film.
It may be.
Perchance.
But it's not superhero. You see, it would be The Dark Knight.
How is that not a superhero?
Batman isn't a superhero. He's a normal man.
But he's
who has no special powers.
Well, so is Iron Man.
He's just awesome. There's an important difference.
Iron Man's a superhero as well.
No, but he has powers that give him superpowers.
Well, so does Batman.
No, he doesn't. What?
Well, he's got. He can fly down from buildings with his.
That's a hang glider. That's not a superhero. Hang gliders aren't superheroes.
It's quite super. it's really good anyway.
Well, yes. Okay, and he's a really good hero.
Yeah, it's really good
anyway.
Hero.
Yeah. Dark Knight for me is towards the top, possibly my favourite film of the year. Yeah, actually, looking down that list, it is. That's my number one. Okay. Maybe we'll go in reverse order. Yeah. Dark Knight, because, it's similar to Iron Man in that it's good actors grounded in a proper story. not overblown effects. And they've just got a good story and good acting. Heath Ledger, obviously brilliant.
Very good.
It's weird. There's no way of accurately telling whether if he was still alive, people would have viewed the film any differently. I'd like to think not much. I think there was probably a bit more hype because of that, but I don't think it affected too much. And the Joker, yeah, the Joker was done right. Because in the Tim Burton Batman, Jack Nicholson is good, but he's not really the Joker. He's not what I envisage as the Joker. He's more a sort of generic bad guy. Well played, but he's not nothing too radical.
He took a lot of beating for me, Jack Nicholson, because I was a bit... I'm always... With any of these sort of remake films... when, you know, not remake, but sort of reimaginings...
Yes.
If I'm there thinking, well, if there's enough villains in the Batman universe, why not pick someone else? Why go back over when Jack Nicholson, I thought, did a very good job? But, you know, Heath Ledger took it in a very different direction.
Well, that's it, because I've read the comics and watched the cartoons. I'm not a complete Batman geek, largely because I only call myself not a complete one because my flatmate is a complete Batman geek, so I know what level really is, and
you
I'm
know
not
how
there.
Bad you can go.
And as far as the comic book Joker goes, Jack Nicholson is nowhere near that. He's not remotely psychotic enough and not quite unpredictable enough either. Whereas Heath Ledger was. He has weirdness going on beneath the surface. And yeah, it was just phenomenal. I saw it 3 times in the cinema, which for a long film is quite a lot. And I enjoyed it equally each time.
I do think the only reason I didn't put it in my top five, I think, was it did, for me, feel a bit long. In that there's probably, you know...
Okay, fair enough.
When they got to, like, the two boats quite near the end, you know, that whole set piece. I would have been ready to go just before that, really. You didn't necessarily need all that. It was, you know, well done, but... I thought it was a little bit long.
No, that's true. I think it possibly suffered slightly from Lord of the Rings Return of the King syndrome in its sort of finishes, and then there's another end, and then another wrap-up, and then you get another bit. But I was loving it all so much that I didn't really care.
Which, incidentally, I saw... I know we're not going to do current film reviews, particularly this one, but I saw Australia a couple of days ago.
Oh, yes.
And I felt that really suffered from that. It's in fact, I'll mention it really quickly now.
Only because hopefully I'll see it this week, and then we can actually do a sort of simultaneous
review. Fair enough. Okay, no, I'll save it to them.
Okay, fair
but enough. No, all I would say is that, yeah, I just did feel it was you're putting your coat on about 4 times, thinking, is that the finish and credits? Oh no, it's another. Oh, and another. Oh, and you know, it just goes on like that. Right. So
go to the loo well in advance.
Exactly.
Again,
exactly. Yes.
Right. So yeah. So that's my good number one. Call it
very nice indeed. So, okay. Well, let me do my number four then, because of course you can categorise and list every film ever in some sort of order.
You and your rules.
I know. I like lists. So number four, my fourth favourite film of the year. Unusual choice, but I've went for the other Boleyn girl.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm female.
I'm a rom-com fan, and explain why, and then I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Fair enough. It just engrossed me. I was really interested by it. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm actually quite a fan of historical films. Do sort of, they always count double for me, really.
Right.
I like seeing films about different parts of real history to save me reading books or looking things up on Wikipedia.
Yes.
Even though I'm well aware, you know, they always skew things. I don't think there can't be many films out there that get it exactly right. There's so many of them skew things off a little bit.
Yeah, it's true.
And I know the other Boleyn girl did that a bit. But that's because Anne Boleyn, no one quite knows, was she a goodie, was she a baddie? And
yeah, you look it at any, could go either way.
You look at anything from the BBC show The Tudors to Man of All Seasons or the Henry VIII series years ago, and they all paint a slightly different version. Sometimes she's the innocent one, and sometimes she's really evil and everywhere in between. So, but I did enjoy seeing it acted out on screen for me, really, and I like a bit of pomp. I like that sort of period of history, and I thought it was well done, interesting, gripping. My only slight hesitance, really, was, you know, that when they make films about English history...
I thought this might come up.
why get two Americans to put on accents?
Surely two Australians and... Two Americans and an Australian.
And an Australian as the king.
To play the three main characters.
And I remember noting at the time, I did a blog about this at the time, that it was the same month that Michelle Ryan from EastEnders in England playing the Bionic Woman in America. And I was there thinking, well, you know, we're being told about carbon footprints and all that. Save on the airfares. Keep the Americans in America. Keep the Brits over here. We'll be in our own films.
So you think Michelle Ryan should have been Anne Boleyn?
Definitely.
Right.
No.
But hang on, but was the other Boleyn girl even filmed in this country?
It probably was. Yeah,
it was a surprising number of films.
I just couldn't quite see the point of that. But apart from that, I really enjoyed it.
Yes, the acting turn, it really doesn't bother me, I think, because there's enough mix and match. And it seems to be the few occasions I've had when someone goes, oh, why have they put an American playing an English person? It's just ridiculous. As soon as you say, well, hang on, but here's all these American films with English people. Like, wow, oh, that's different.
Well, no, I don't know. I don't feel it's a one-sided thing for me. I'm not there saying
Americans
shouldn't be Brits and we should be allowed to play Americans.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking there's so many films where there's an awful film called, I think it's called Caffeine, which is set in a London cafe, and it's one of these, they're trying to make it sort of like, hey, there's like these four or five young, hip, trendy 20 somethings working in this cafe, and cool, it's a bit of a grind, and like coffee grind. But I rarely turn off a film. And I got this film on the online DVD rental thingy, and I got about half an hour in, and what's her name? American Beauty, very thin. The one in the rose petals.
Oh, I want to say Mia Farrow. Mia Sara.
Yeah, that's
no, me, no, it's not Mia Sara.
Mira Sorvino.
Mira Sorvino.
Her English accent. Is it the worst thing to be believed?
Would it put Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins
to
shame?
Absolutely. It's awful. And you know, some of them, Gwyneth Paltrow, Sliding Doors, well done.
Yeah,
you.
Very
good indeed. Natalie Portman, pretty good as well. Well done.
Well, and Scarlett Johansson as well. Because all of them do good English accents in the other bingo.
But some of them, just watch Caffeine. Find it just to go, ah, my ears.
Yes. And at what point did anyone casting it, presumably not listen and go, oh no, you can't do an English accent. We'll find someone else. Don't worry about it.
I think it must be made for an American audience saying, hey, they'll want to know what goes on in a traditional London caff. They probably watched EastEnders on BBC America and thought, we could do that, but with pretty Americans.
And also, when we were over in America, various people thought we were German.
Yeah.
So clearly the accent thing, it doesn't translate as well. No, The Other Berlin Girl, it wasn't a bad film, particularly. Although, it's one of the few films where the direction annoyed me. Almost every other shot was through a door or through a window
or through
some siding or around something else or over the top of something else. And it was, just show us what's going on. Understand the principle that it's meant to be, it's all a bit behind closed doors, there's slightly secretive stuff going on, but it was just irritating. So half the screen is blocked out by some wooden partition. I just don't care. I enjoyed it, I watched it, I made my way through it, and it didn't annoy me. But I think Natalie Portman is very good in a lot of things. I think she was miscast in this, possibly because she's just a bit too diminutive.
Yes,
they needed someone with a bit more physical presence, which isn't her forte, because she's a very tiny lady.
I'd like to have seen it with the role swapped, actually.
Well, yeah, I think that could have worked. There was clearly logic to the casting choice, but it didn't
I do agree, actually.
It didn't quite work for me.
And also, the Scarlett Johansson was playing the meek one, and Natalie Portman played the feisty one, was actually, I think, Scarlett Johansson can play feisty pretty well.
Yes.
And Natalie Portman plays meek very well.
It may just be the hair colour is what made it work.
Yeah.
But I mean, they both did well with it, but I just don't think they were ideally cast. But it's nice to see Scarlett Johansson, who I have a great and unrequited love for. Frankly, it's just nice to see her in a proper heavyweight acting role doing stuff, because you get various celebrities who are famous and very good-looking, but they never actually do anything, or even actors who don't actually do that much particularly good. So it's nice to see her in something that does well and is quite heavyweight, and she's demonstrating she's on the celebrity market for a reason.
Tell us about something else.
Fair enough. I'm going to move from The Other Berlin Girl, a natural segue entirely into WALL-E.
Why wouldn't you?
Oh, it ties in perfectly, just because it's next down the list. But also, I think it probably is my number two as well. I'm now realising that list is probably more ordered than I realised. Yeah, WALL-E, because I loved it, absolutely loved it, and it's indicative of an animated film, or proof that animated films can be a lot better than a lot of live action films. And yet people seem to slightly put them down just because they're animated, and hopefully WALL-E's going to start turning that tide.
Wasn't there Oscar buzz about it actually being Best Picture nominated?
Rather
than Best Animated.
How much you can trust Oscar buzz, I don't know. But yes, there's talk that it may go in. And this is, I can see the point that some people disagree with there being a Best Animated Films category, because it means that great animated films going to get sidelined into that, regardless of whether they belong up with the rest. Because I think, was it Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture?
Yeah, I think that was before the Best Animated
Film category came out.
Yeah.
I think because it's a brilliantly done film, it makes you empathise fantastically with two non-human characters that don't speak for enormous great chunks of it. And it's a bit of a gamble as well for having that, and just a lot of physical comedy.
It's very old school in a way. It's quite almost Buster Keaton and...
exactly.
You know, it's that sort of... It's very physical stuff. I mean, it's pretty very sellable. You can imagine it all around the world.
Well, I think if it was less good a film, the cynics among us, of which I am one, thinking, they only left the dialogue out so they could put it to anywhere.
Exactly,
But WALL-E, I think, is such a good film. That's probably not the reason why.
Yeah.
Because there is dialogue in it later on. And it does... The quality does drop a bit, or it gets slightly less absorbing once you get the humans involved.
Yeah, once they leave the planet and spacing. The humans. But then again, humans, they've never quite managed to nail animating a human yet.
Yes.
Really, and make it, you know, you either go down the realist route, which obviously they haven't for this one.
Yeah.
Or you go down the fun route. But how do you make them fun, really? I don't know, it's tricky, but...
I mean, and it's a slightly forced satire of, oh, we're all such bloated people.
Yeah.
But you know,
it's a little heavy-handed that bit.
Yes.
But the first half I thought was wonderful, really.
And it still ends up making you care deeply about these essentially automated machines that technically have no feelings.
Why?
But they obviously do. So I think that is just, it's a phenomenal achievement to make something animated that you care so much about that doesn't technically even have feelings.
I love the teasers they had on the line about him with a hula hoop and if you haven't seen them, just have a, I don't know, they're probably on YouTube or something, but no, the teasers are, they're very sweet.
Yeah, so and I sincerely hope that it ends up getting nominated for Best Picture, but at the same time there are a lot of good candidates this year, some of which, because looking down our list, it's relatively mainstream films we've gone for, except for your number one, which we'll get to, because there probably aren't that many Best Picture candidates in our list. Because there are lots of heavier weight films, but we should say that a lot of them aren't actually out over here yet. I think they came out in the last couple of months or a couple of weeks in America.
Well, interesting, looking down your list, you've also got a couple of films that you wish you'd seen, which probably are more Oscar fare, I suppose.
That's true. Well, the top one probably isn't, but the documentary is.
Trans-Siberian?
I doubt that'll be a Best Picture novel. I don't think it's not quite... It's apparently very, very good.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Trans-America. That was the one a couple of years ago, which was Oscar nominated.
That was Oscar nominated. No,
yeah, what's Trans-Siberian? I never heard of
Trans-Siberian.
That one.
Trans-Siberian, well, we could move on to this now.
Yeah,
briefly.
Go for it.
Okay, Trans-Siberian. I can't remember that much about it off the top of my head. I think it's Rachel Weisz.
Okay.
And essentially, it seems Hitchcockian is overused, but it's that sort of thing.
I like
Hitchcockian. It's on a Trans-Siberian train. And it's something like her husband goes missing... Or some sort of mystery unfolds.
Is it that's like about... flight plan on a train?
Hopefully not. Oh, that was awful. But essentially, it's a title that stuck in my mind. I think because I read Roger Ebert's review of it, and he said along the lines of, "They don't really make films of this style anymore. It's quite a low impact but very good mystery thriller."
Yeah,
and it's very good as a result.
I've just realised the sacrilegious comment I just made by saying, "Oh, someone goes missing on a train." That sounds like Flight Plan, but on a train. Flight Plan, of course, was The Lady Vanishes. On a plane.
Ah.
So, in fact, Trans-Siberian is much more back to the Hitchcockian roots.
Well, yes.
Rather than me saying, oh, yeah, sounds like that rubbish Jodie Foster film, which was indeed based on a very good Alfred Hitchcock film.
Well,
so,
yes.
Fair play.
But you caught yourself.
Caught myself just in time.
Fair enough. Anyway, so that's Trans-Siberian, slightly off topic.
And Man on Wire as well, which I wanted to see.
Yeah, because that's now out on DVD over here. I've seen a couple of trailers, essentially just full of reviews saying how awesome it is. And it's meant to be amazing.
This is the bloke who tightrope walks, is that right?
Yes, between the Twin Towers. Yeah, so they cover essentially him sneaking up huge amounts of equipment up there and then getting the wire across. And then I think he even went across several times.
Really?
Because their security guards appeared at both ends.
Right.
So he was just kind of hovering in the middle, just having some fun.
Where's
he good?
Hoping they'll build a third tower pretty quickly and escape to that one.
So he should have had a parachute and then problem solved. But yeah, and apparently they make no real reference to 9/11 either, because it's essentially not about that as a film. And yeah, it's an amazing story of human achievement and kind of sticking it to the man as well. And
When I saw it advertised, I thought it was Man on Fire, which was the Denzel Washington
revenge film,
which is different.
Yes,
so,
or possibly like Bird on a Wire.
That's good, Goldie Hawn.
But with a man,
yeah,
yes.
Nice.
So that's Wally of my best.
Very good. Shall I move on to Cloverfield?
Oh, I think that would make sense.
Cloverfield, which sounds it always sounds like a supermarket.
It does.
I think in Summerfield, who sell clover, the butter. But it's not that.
It's very food-based.
In fact, Cloverfield, it doesn't actually get... The title is not mentioned in the film at all, is it?
No, I think it was just a code name.
Yeah.
Which ended... Isn't it... I think the studio offices...
The production offices of the Rose.
Cloverfield Road.
Yeah. But Cloverfield, if you haven't seen it, then I almost don't want to tell you too much about it. But then you kind of... The moment's gone, really. I'm sure you have seen it. It's the one which was a handheld video camera, which is found, which has been done before. It's quite Blair Witch. But I thought it was like Blair Witch with a budget, really. And
Yes.
And I thought
also less stylized as a result, I think.
Yeah.
Because it felt more like a realistic handheld.
Yeah.
Someone, because you've got little snippets of real life rather than just people in a forest going, oh, I'm scared.
Yeah, yeah. And as a result, I found it really effective. And I actually remember I saw this after a gig in Leeds. And I went to Cineworld Bradford, which is the only place showing it, for the midnight showing, and saw it once again on my own, like midnight on a Friday, surrounded by, of course, it's quite full of local Bradfordians.
Yes.
And I loved it. I was the one in the middle. I really enjoyed it. And, the fact that, it's teens or 20-somethings having a party, suddenly there's some sort of attack, they don't really know what's going on, running through New York and Statue of Liberty heads appearing on the street and also not seeing the monster, which is brilliant.
Yes.
As well. Little bits you do, and there's a nice bit at the end, which I won't say in case you haven't seen it, but it's good anyway.
As in the bit at the end, sort of the main film, or the bit after the credits?
After the credits.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, it's a very nice, and I didn't even notice it, so I had to go and look afterwards. But
yes, because I've only seen it once and I knew it was there, but then forgot to look for it, so
yeah.
I still haven't seen it.
But if you pay attention, basically, if you watch it, pay attention, and you'll see at the very, very end, very quickly, briefly, in the background how the alien appeared.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah, so I came out the film, loved it, but it's great seeing all these basically young Bradfordians. I know they don't not call that, and I would never go up to one and say, "Hello, Bradfordian," before they would kill me. But I love the fact that they all hated it, and they came out going, "Ah, we're rubbish. I couldn't see monster anywhere." Or whatever they say.
Yes. Which is
but no, they all hated it because they wanted a film where it's like monsters and gore and stuff.
Well, in which case,
but
then
they can
go and watch Godzilla and be disappointed.
Exactly.
The modern one, not the classics.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, because the main thrust of it is the method rather than the end result, if that makes sense. Yeah, and it works very well. And it was nearly on my list, but then I saw you'd added it to yours, and so I'll leave it off and just essentially just because otherwise we'd just be sitting here agreeing with each other. It is very good. I was very tense the whole way through, and it keeps you, and there's not too many, because it's tense rather than big shocks.
Yes.
Which, there are one or two big shocks, which I'm never a really huge fan of, but only where they belong. And the rest of it, you get genuinely involved in the story of these people. And it's sort of typical in the sense of a small human interest story in the sense of a larger scale thing. Mm. But because of the immediacy of it, it works very well.
Yeah.
And you stay with them the whole way through. And the ending, it works very well as well.
Yeah.
Which I won't say too much about
I
either.
I thought it was excellent. You do something.
Right, I'm going to move on to Hancock, which is an unusual choice, I think. I was browsing, essentially, in order to try and remember the films of 2008, I was browsing through various top films of 2008 lists to be reminded of what films are out this year.
Yeah.
And I don't think Hancock was on any of them.
I don't think so, no.
But possibly because it was a bit of a flop. Well, I don't think it was a bit. Actually, no, I think it did very well, but it wasn't that well received by many.
I think it did only well because it was summer hype and
it was,
saw it
well,
it's
Will Smith, and pretty much nothing Will Smith, except for £7, which apparently is tanked.
Yeah, I hear
but pretty much nothing Will Smith is in ever does badly. Mm. But no, Hancock, I can see why. I think the trailers were a bit misleading. The trailers made it out to be.
That's my problem with it, yeah.
Yes.
It was a bit like.
The trailers made it out to be, oh, it's a superhero and he's a bit of a mess and then he may redeem himself, whereas the reality is that for about half of the film, and then you get a bit of revelation as to backstory and the involvement of other people, which I won't ruin for you in case you've not seen it, and the film takes a bit of a spin off but into, for me anyway, very interesting territory. And so you find out more about the mythology of Hancock and where he came from and what's going on with his life, and for me I found that very interesting. But I can see why people, if they went along thinking, hey, it's going to be a comedy action film, and then suddenly they get thrown a bit of a curve, and I don't want to say that people refused to follow it and so it was too complicated and they gave up on it.
Yeah.
But I think if you're expecting a certain thing, and the trailers are very clear in making people expect certain things, and then you're not given that, it throws you off enough that you don't quite regain your footing enough
exactly.
to enjoy the film.
And that's
if
my
that makes sense.
That's my problem with it. I think I probably enjoyed it for the fact that it was a bit more deep and involved than I thought it was going to be. Well, the trailer really made it look like a comedy.
Yes.
And it also had all the funny bits from the film, pretty much.
True.
There wasn't really much left in the film that was funny.
That's it. But I would say that's not necessarily that bad, because there weren't jokes that fell flat, but it's not as much of a comedy as a lot of people were probably led to believe.
Yeah.
It's more of a light superhero action drama, if that makes sense.
It is, yeah.
Which is an odd niche.
I'd probably enjoy it more on DVD in like a year or so when I'd sort of forgotten.
Yes,
about
Yes, well, because on the plane to or from America, I watched it again just because it was on, and I quite fancy seeing it again, and was reminded how much I'd liked it.
Mm.
And yeah, it's worth a watch, I think. If you haven't seen the trailer, or if you just accept that it's going to be different from what you're expecting, then give it a go, and you may be surprised. But it stayed with me a lot, and I enjoyed the mythology, and I want them to make another film or two, because I think there's a lot of basis there for more.
I think now I know what it's all about, I would watch Hancock 2 and probably enjoy it if it was along a similar line. But again, it's just not expecting it to be the laugh-out-loud, hilarious comedy that you thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Superhero bunging into signs, that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, if it's made. Which is why it's a tricky one, because now a sequel probably wouldn't do very well, because they kind of alienated both sides, in a way.
Exactly. It's like watching, you know, they do these spoof mashup trailers.
Yes.
Of, like, Mary Poppins, like, called Scary Mary, like an evil version. Or Titanic as a horror film.
Mm.
Or The Shining as a romantic comedy. It's like watching one of those, the trailers first.
Yes.
And then going to watch the film. If I saw The Shining trailer as a romantic comedy, I thought, well, yeah, I'll go and see that. You know, the trailer had Salisbury Hill in it by Peter Gabriel. It must be fun. And then went to see The Shining, I'd probably be a bit almost let down in a way.
Yeah,
even though it's a very good film.
Because the whole way through, you keep trying to think of it as what you think it should be.
And also, even though at this point you there think, oh, okay, it's a different sort of film, you're still sort of waiting for the laugh.
Yes.
You're thinking, oh, but any minute now, there's going to be
so
the
you
big...
end up with a permanent sense of disappointment, even though it's no one's fault that you've got that, but you just... Well, it's the people who put the trailers together.
It's the trailers people.
Yeah, they made it just think, all right, summer blockbuster, people are going to see this. And then it was slightly heavier than people were probably expecting. But I really, really liked it a lot.
Shall we? I think we've got to race through some more. So, speaking of letdowns, I think it's time to do some of the worst films of 2008.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm just going to race through. I've got three I wrote down here very quick. Indiana Jones, I won't dwell on because we did mention that.
Yes, we did
last week.
Last week. I'm fairly sure I left it in. I had to do a lot of editing.
I did listen back, okay, and I believe it was in. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, and I wouldn't put it the worst, but yeah, massively disappointing.
Yeah,
too criticisable.
No, thank you. And also, in terms of, you know, much anticipated directors, I suppose, doing other things, The Happening, which is M. Night Shyamalan's
Shyamalan.
Well, I know I'll call him Shyamalan because they did Make a Night to Remember.
Fair enough.
I'm well aware that to do a spoof Neighbour Someone, it's ideally someone that else people have heard of.
Yes.
And most people don't know Shyamalan, but never mind. But anyway, M. Night Shyamalan, you know, Sixth Sense, wonderful, Unbreakable, still pretty good.
It's quite good.
Signs.
Yeah.
The Village.
There's a definite trend, isn't there?
And what's the... Oh, Lady in the Water. Give me a gun. And lastly, The Happening with, why are you doing this to your career? You were so brilliant. And The Happening was awful. It stank. It was a horrible film. Mark Wahlberg just running through fields with no real explanation of what this happening is, why it's happening. People kill themselves for no real reason. The audience were thinking, please, me, let it be me. Come on. And then the ultimate ending. I'll ruin it for you now, gladly, okay? So that you don't have to sit through this. Oh, it's the trees. Oh, there you go. The trees want to kill us for no real reason.
Yeah, they're just fighting back against something.
And at the end, they just go, let's wait, go somewhere where the breeze will die down and the trees won't kill us. And then they live happily ever after.
What, just upwind of trees?
Yeah, and they just think eventually... And then it just stops. Then the trees decide not to kill them anymore. And credits roll. An hour and a half too late. So, avoid.
And the other one is one I agree with.
Oh, Jumper.
Yes.
Yeah.
See that
Hayden Christensen, was it?
Yes. Who I know. I think he was all right in it. The acting wasn't bad, really.
Yeah, Billy Elliot as well, didn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
And Samuel L. Jackson.
That's true. Yeah, so some good people.
But the thing, yeah, I mean, and Hayden Christensen, for all, I don't think he was good as Anakin, but I think I'm willing to blame George Lucas for that.
Yeah.
Because I've seen him in other stuff, and he's all right.
It's just the film sucked.
Yeah. Again, it's a trailer. The trailer made it look quite... it's not even the trailer fault, because the film was much like the trailer, but worse.
Yeah.
Because the trailer looked quite good, and the concept was quite interesting. I think Jumper was... It's one of the relatively few films, because I've never made a film. I can't pretend I know what's involved. It's not easy, obviously. Yeah. Otherwise, everyone would do it. But Jumper's one of the few films I've watched, and at every single point through it, I've thought, I wouldn't have done it that way. If I'd done it this way around, it would have been better.
And you don't want to do it like that.
Exactly. And it's just so many aspects of the plot and the characteristics and or characterization. I just thought, no, you shouldn't have... We want to see more of this and less of that. And you haven't explained that, and you could have done. You're dwelling on this when we don't care. You should have been focusing on something else. And it was just... And the concept is interesting.
Yeah, the
people jumping through space, not time.
Yeah.
And they can go anywhere, and you know, living it up and robbing banks. And then there's a group who tries to fight them, which kind of makes sense. And then he meets up with another jumper who's fighting back. And so it could be quite good. I mean, you know, fairly brain-dead action film, but not bad at all. And yet it's just ruined on every step of the way and turned into a huge pile of drivel.
Thinking about it as well, of course, Americans don't have the word jumper as a jumper, do they?
That's a very good point.
It's a sweater.
Yes, a jumper is a sweater.
Over here, you know, jumper, you know, oh, you're a jumper. You go, it's like being called...
I'm going to make a brand new action film called Cardigan.
Exactly, yeah. Fleece.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Yeah, so jumper, just avoid.
I've just seen on your list as well a film that I don't know how this escaped me from my...
I know,
well,
I was surprised, which is Max Payne.
Maximum Pain.
Now, actually, we know we did this in the first one. So we have covered it.
But if you want to hear us rant about it, then
go to episode one. But essentially, again, it's a film that I hoped would be very good because I love the game. It had potential, and yet it was just an unending nightmare of awfulness.
Indeed.
And the last one for me is sort of similar to Indiana Jones, but I have less fondness for the original films, and so I hated it more, which is The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Oh, yes.
Because the first two Mummy films, I quite like. They're lightweight, fun action romps. And this one has no heart or soul whatsoever.
Right.
It's hey, we're going to have a fight in an action sequence. Brilliant. And then some exposition. And now another action sequence. What's going on? Oh, I don't care. What's going on? No, they're just... Oh, they've lived. Brilliant. Oh, credits. The whole way through, this is happening. And there's something else happening. And something else is happening. And I can go home now. Fantastic.
Yeah, fair enough. Exactly.
And it was I was left completely deadened by the whole film.
Yeah.
Which surprised me. And I was just thinking, it's going to be rubbish, but I'm going to enjoy it. And I didn't enjoy it. And it was still rubbish.
Watch out, because if the film leaves you dead, end, you'll have to come back in 2,000 years and fight some people.
Well, that would be an improvement, frankly. Well, there you are. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's, and yeah, brief, overblown, yes, overblown. I agree Indiana Jones was over. Some people say, oh, it was brilliant, and it really wasn't.
Yeah.
And also, there will be blood.
Interesting,
me,
controversial.
It was good. Daniel Day-Lewis, obviously extremely good.
Yeah.
But it was just a bit too long for what it was, and it was slightly, it was slightly too full of itself. Yes.
Yeah, no scene, a scene with these people, then a scene with these people, then back and forth in the A and B plots, like in most films. No, it was just A plot, oil, oil.
And so, I mean, it was good, but I was glad when it was over.
I'd actually read again my blog at the time I wrote about this, which was, basically me just moaning about the fact that Daniel Day-Lewis, I thought, was brilliant, very watchable. Even with his back to us in the screen, you're there watching him with his back to us rather than someone else who's talking with their face to you. But I'm there thinking he could have read the phone directory and I would have been very interested and hooked. So, you know, you're there wondering how much of it is the film then being good and how much is just him.
Yes, exactly. So, throw your talent at something slightly more engaging.
Probably,
So, hang on, I just did Hancock.
Yes.
So I think it's on to your number two.
Number two in the list.
Not onto your number two.
No, please, let's not focus on that. In Bruges, I went for as
which again was nearly made onto my list, but again I left it off to avoid overlap.
I thought it was a fine little gem, really.
Yeah.
One of those things that you could tell is just made by people who want to make a nice, well, not nice film, but a good film, and not made by, you know, a summer blockbuster producer sort of thinking, hey, let's do this and do this and make lots of money. This was a lovely little film about two criminals on the run, hiding out in Bruges and hating it.
Yes.
I love the fact also that it was filmed in Bruges. And yet they spent the entire film slagging the place off, just going, oh, it's awful, it rains, it's horrible.
I think it's the point that Colin Farrell makes, essentially because he grew up in London, or his character, well, and he did, grew up in Ireland. They've got lovely places there as well.
Yeah.
So he said, you know, I might find this city lovely if I grew up on a farm and never seen anything, but I didn't, so I don't.
Exactly. It's a fair enough.
So, yeah, it's a fair point.
It's a very fair point. But yeah, it's Colin Farrell and it's Brendan Gleeson, I believe, is it?
Yes.
Yes. And also Ralph Fiennes doing a ridiculous accent.
Yeah, but again,
it almost sort of works.
Film.
Yeah, it's just fun, you know. It sounds a bit like Michael Caine on Heat. Yeah, I'm amazed they put a trailer together that didn't contain lots of swearing.
Yes.
Because the film, every other word is swearing in it. But it is great fun. And yeah, it's quite dark, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. Well, given what they're on the run from, to a degree.
Yeah, exactly. But it's sort of lightly comedic where it needs to be, but then it's also deftly handled and quite sweet and, you know, bittersweet, really.
I mean, it could almost be a play, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it is a play, but it would work well as a play.
Actually. Yeah,
because it's essentially just, a lot of it is just two men wandering around Bruges and getting into events.
Then having scrapes occasionally. No, I thought it was lovely.
Yes. It is well worth a rental.
Yeah, that's all I have to say on it, because it was so good. Just rent it.
See, mine, because I've now got five films left.
Well, rattle through them all in about 10 seconds each.
Well, yes. Okay, well, I'll sum them up generally, because in terms of favourite comedy, it's a toss-up between Forgetting Sarah Marshall or Tropic Thunder.
Oh, yes.
I think Forgetting Sarah Marshall I preferred as an overall film.
Russell Brand, though, normally.
He normally annoys me, but in this, he's kind of all right. I think because he's doled out in small portions.
I guess.
And his character is meant to be... His character is essentially seems to be what Russell Brand is actually like, but his character is also meant to be quite irritating, a bit sex-obsessed. And so you kind of forgive him because he's a character, even though it's not really a character.
We all know
it's
him.
Yeah, and Tropic Thunder doesn't work quite as well as a film, as an entire film, I think, but it has more comedic moments than Forgetting Sarah Marshall. So in terms of bigger laughs, Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
There's more consistency.
I miss Tropic Thunder. When it came out, actually. I meant to see Tropic Thunder.
Robert Downey Jr. is phenomenal in it.
Yeah, I hear he's very good.
He's very insane. Yeah. And also Tom Cruise, I have to say, is very good in his cameo. He's just playing against type. So yeah, so it's definitely worth a watch, but it's not quite as good. I think someone made the point saying a comedy is inversely proportional to its budget.
Very true.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Which is probably why in Bruges, very good. Well, it's not that it's ridiculously funny, but it's very low budget and so it can be funny. Whereas Tropic Thunder occasionally doesn't throw money instead of jokes.
But you can see it on the screen. You can see the money.
It's a bit gaudy. Large scale action stuff distracts a bit from the comedy.
Yeah.
Definitely maybe sort of comedy as well.
Yeah, well, actually,
also rom-com.
I had that on my list actually, which surprised me that I particularly enjoyed it so much. Also, because I really can't stand Ryan Reynolds.
I quite like Ryan Reynolds, despite him being married to obviously my one true love, Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
But again, largely because he's good. Aside from Blade Trinity, when he was essentially Jason Lee.
Right.
But apart from that, I quite like Ryan Reynolds.
The nice thing about Deathly Maybe is it's the story of a dad telling his daughter the story of how he met her mother.
Yeah.
But what he does quite cleverly is. You know, tells his story of three women he's met.
Yes.
And then not say at the end of it, until the end of it, which one her mother was. Which, just looking back at it now, it was the inverse. It was the mother saying, well, I slept with all of these men. You see if you can guess which of these absolutely evil men who's run away wasn't actually around for you.
No, but this is where it's fine. And also, it's not run away. They've just split up.
No, exactly.
And then, of course, at the end, we find out because we see, and it's... Yes. But yeah, it's an interestingly told, and it's... I mean, if you're not a rom-com fan, you won't like it, but it's a slightly atypical rom-com because it's not got... You know what the ending is going to be, in a way. Mm. And it's not going to be a typically happy ending, but you're interested in how it all plays out. And then Juno, sort of similar as well.
I
think that in American terms, that may have been last year, but we got it this year, which is a very good teen drama, light touch. But also Hellboy 2.
Oh, yes.
I think visually, I loved it. Well, I love the whole film as well, but it's one of the most visually inventive films I've seen all year.
Mm.
It's just incredible to look at. But also, it's not all style over substance. There is a lot of substance there too. And it's a vast improvement on the first one, which is all right, but a bit generic. And this one has just got a lot more going on.
Yeah.
So even if you think it's not necessarily your kind of film, I think it's worth giving it a go.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen Hellboy 1 either, actually.
Fair enough. You don't really need to see Hellboy 1, but it might help.
Okay, well, I'll make it a go.
But it's worth it.
Is it Ron Perlman, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah.
Pretty much the role he was born to play.
I've only ever seen him in The Last Supper when he was very good in that. But yeah, he's sort of a lumbering... ape of a man, isn't he, really? He's huge.
Yes, he is huge. But then Hellboy is meant to be huge.
Yeah, perfect.
So it works perfectly. Anyway, so those are all sort of my top few films of
the year.
Very good,
very good. I think so. That is only one other thing on the list left, which is my number one film of the year, which I'm not even going to dwell on much because we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, and that is The Boy in Striped Pyjamas, which I have nothing flippant to say about because it's very nice.
Yes,
it's a wonderful... wonderfully portrayed, wonderfully acted, wonderfully written, wonderfully directed, produced, wonderfully everything film. And it's about a child experiencing the Holocaust from the perspective of he's the son of a Nazi commandant, and his dad is not telling him exactly what's going on. So he thinks they've moved to the country to be, you know, which is near a farm, but of course it's not a farm, it's a concentration camp. And yeah, it's just a really excellently told story, I think, with an ending that I didn't expect. So recommended.
Fair enough. I've still not seen, but it is on my rental list, and it will arrive in due course.
And it also contains, in a cameo in one of the earlier scenes, the guy who's singing at my wedding.
Yeah.
So that's nice. Entertaining a bunch of the SS. So that's nice to know. Fresh from the Nazis.
straight to your wedding.
Now singing at my wedding, so that's good to know.
Well, what's a wedding without a little bit of history?
Exactly. Carefully put.
Yeah, no, I was one of those sentences I began, and I thought, oh dear.
There's no good way to end this.
There's no great end to this sentence.
No good way.
I'll just use the word history.
Well done.
Excellent.
Anyway, we've dwelt on that a couple of weeks ago, so I shall leave it there on that one, I think. So that's about it.
I think that pretty well that wraps up 2008.
And now
onwards and upwards into 2009. Woo-hoo! Whatever it brings.
Indeed. So we'll leave it there. We normally do a Desert Island Flicks, but this has been one giant Desert Island Flicks, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true.
So we could just say that my Desert Island Flick of 2008 is Boy's Striped Pyjamas.
That's true.
Pick one?
For me, it would be The Dark Knight.
Dark Knight, so there you go. Go see them two films.
Yes. And again, it's The Dark Knight, a bit like Wally, is a film that... Because Boy in Striped Pyjamas could well end up with Oscar nods, and if not, it should be. It's definitely that sort of film.
Yeah.
Whereas The Dark Knight, I really hope, does get some heavyweight Oscar nominations, rather than just effects or general, oh, it looked nice. Just because it's kicking the superhero film... Not superhero film, hero film. Comic book film.
Now,
that's what it
now we see the violence inherent
system. No, but it's kicking comic book films up into the next level.
Right.
I think Roger Ebert said that Iron Man was kind of the very best of the last generation of comic book films, and The Dark Knight is the beginning of the next one.
Yes.
Because it's just a leap above... Oh, it proves what they can do with it, and they can make it a proper film that happens to be based on a comic.
Yeah.
Rather than just a very good film that happens to be based on a comic.
So, on that bombshell there of John undermining every argument he's ever made by agreeing
by happening
that The Dark Knight is a superhero film...
No, I misspoke in a very Hillary Clinton sniper fight. What? You're sniggering. You've got some slightly wrong thought.
No, I've got no thought at all. We'll leave it there then. Exactly, yeah.
Oh, really?
Why no?
Okay, you've got something?
No, I haven't got anything,
really?
Honestly. No.
Oh, okay.
This episode has ended with John thinking I have a thought, and I don't.
Yes.
Which makes it the perfect place to finish, really.
Exactly, because we've run out of thoughts.
So thank you for listening. Do review us on iTunes, if you would, and do tell people...
Well, review us on iTunes if you have nice things to say.
Oh, yeah, if you haven't, then just tell us quietly and discreetly.
Yeah,
and we'll see if we can
email
change
us. Yeah,
first.
Email us telling us what to improve, and we'll improve it, and then you can review us once you approve.
And we'll see you later in 2009.
Yes.
With another edition of the Movie Banter Podcast. Farewell.
Take care.